Craig Hoffman.
Those are the candidates. Now we get to play the game. Who's the worst?
The Hoffman Show.
Congratulations to the Jets. You finally didn't make one.
On the Team 980 and the Odyssey app.
Boom, boom, boom. Drive slow, homie.
Busy, busy couple of days at Commander's Camp. It's the Hoffman Show on the Team 980 and always live on the free Odyssey app. We got a lot to get to with someone who lives that beat every single day. It's not my beat.
Today's top story from the perspective of someone who's there.
You are looking live.
It's just in.
Not my beat.
It is Sam Fortier's beat on the Washington Post. Of course, covering the Commanders. Sam, what's up, man? How are you?
I'm doing well. Quick shout out to Anthony Haney for bringing me in to Drive Slow by Kanye. Late registration, that era, some of my favorites. So big ups to him. That made my day.
Excellent. We're here to make days. I guess we'll see based off. You have to report the truth. We're here to make days. You just have to report the truth. And if that makes someone's day, great. But that's kind of the nature of a reporting job. But yeah, late registration era Kanye, like there's few better than that.
No, absolutely. That's, and you know, man, at least it's been a quiet few days out in Ashburn at Commander's Camp. So I'm sure we don't really have anything to talk about.
No. We'll see if we can scrape through for like 3 minutes here and then cut you loose, because I know that's what you like. Quick hitters that have no depth. I'm going to quickly move past that drive-by. So last couple of days, let's start with on-the-field stuff. And then we can get to Mills and we can get to everything else going on. Last couple of days, offenses looked better from everyone that's been out there that I've seen. What has worked the last couple of days for this offense?
For me, Carson Wentz balls out when he makes quick decisions and he's kept clean. And I think that bears out from what you saw last year in Indianapolis. I'll throw out the Philly 2020, but to me, that's what he looks, you know, the best at. And when he looks inconsistent, it's a byproduct of, oh, you know, the pocket's collapsing, or, oh, I'm holding on, you know, the first, second read wasn't there, and I'm trying to get through my progressions. Because the progressions in Scott Turner's offense are a little bit different than the ones he came from. So I think that's him processing. And so when you see him make quick decisions, as he has the last few days, that certainly helps out. It doesn't mean he's perfect. It doesn't mean he looks like Patrick Mahomes out there, but he's certainly better.
So one of the things that I think also can help him is actually giving him more. Like sometimes when an offense, especially for a veteran who like knows there's more out there, it can be so restrictive. And especially if they're stuck on a very basic play package and some of those plays are not ones that he particularly loves, that the more that Scott Turner gives him in terms of solutions, getting in right plays, you know, possibly getting to plays that he likes better, could certainly help him. Have you seen an expanded offense at all these past couple of days in any way, whether it's personnel groupings or just maybe like, hey, I don't feel like they've run that concept a ton during camp yet, as they've gotten deeper and deeper into their install?
Yeah, they're certainly using a little bit more of two tight end sets. You know, they're in 11 a lot, especially early. They've had some, you know, new scheme runs. He had an RPO that he actually, you know, kept and ran in for a touchdown in the red zone. I believe it was yesterday. So they've definitely, you know, incorporated some new things, made him look comfortable. And I do want to point out, because this has been a real topic of discussion, some of those struggles that you hear about are not always solely on Carson. Sometimes it's receivers running routes at different depths or different timing. We talked about that a little bit after the stadium practice. So while I think that Carson shoulders the lion's share of that blame when he's inconsistent, especially when he's, you know, throwing a slant behind Terry or something like that, it's not solely on him. So when people hear, you know, read our stories, like that part of the context should be included.
Yeah, definitely. And I've used the example of like if a receiver's got a 12-yard in cut and he cuts it at 10, if he does that, it's the receiver's fault. Now, it also gets to the point where if he does it every single time, Carson's got to make the adjustment and just throw the ball instead of the spot that it's coached to. You need to eventually hit the receiver. And we're also getting to the point in camp where he's getting enough reps with some of these guys that hopefully he's starting to learn some of those intricacies on any particular route with any of these particular receivers.
Exactly. And to me, once you develop that timing, once you can kind of find a strike zone, you know, through which to hit a receiver, then you start saying, okay, how are we really judging this guy? You know, what are the throws that are determining whether he is remaining as inconsistent as he was last year, or has he made progress. And I think Scott Turner does a really nice job of scheming things up, getting guys open, giving you easy answers. Like, I would expect to see a ton of play action. I think they ran at the third highest rate last year in the league. And Taylor Heinicke, you know, is obviously a different quarterback, but the gap between his productivity on play action and non-play action was drastic. So I would expect to see a lot of motion, a lot of play action, a lot of Scott Turner saying, hey, Carson, like, I'm gonna give you the answers as much as I can.
Sam Fortier of the Washington Post with us. A lot of what we just talked about does ultimately center around Curtis Samuel and his availability. And rather than asking you for an injury update, because we kind of know they've got a plan. He's going to play some. He's going to play not. All right, cool. We got it. Covered. I don't have to be on the beat to get that anymore. What I would have to be on the beat for is watching practice day in, day out, and seeing how the offense looks with and without Samuel. And obviously, there's only a limited number of snaps in 7-on-7, 9-on-9, 11-on-11. But from what you can see, is there a significant difference in production or in even what they're running when Samuel's out there versus when he's not?
I wouldn't say there's a significant difference in what they're running, but what he's capable of, he hasn't made one of those juke moves that he made on the second day of camp that Terry McLaurin said made him flash back to Ohio State. I haven't seen that level of explosiveness with him. And, you know, I know he recently did an interview and said, you know, when I'm out there, I'm 100%. When I'm not out there, I'm not. And to me, I don't think it's that cut and dried. I don't think it can't be that simple, because if he were 100%, he would be out there. And if he were 100%, he'd be making more of those cuts. So I don't think they're limiting him necessarily in terms of routes he can run. He's run a ton of screens, which, I don't think is indicative of his injury status. But I do think it's more complicated maybe than he wants to acknowledge.
Do you, like, when he's not out there, whether it's just because it's not his rep and there's, like, second stringers or third stringers or whoever out there, or on the days that he's over on the side field, are they still able to do a lot of the motion and stuff that they'll probably ultimately want to use him for? And who are the guys that are getting those snaps and in that role when they do?
Yeah, when he's not on the field, obviously you have Terry and Jahan, but for that third guy most of the time is Deami Brown. Sometimes you've seen Cam Sims in there. You know, you've seen Dax Milne, some of those other guys, kind of step into that role. But it's not limiting them. I think it would limit the effectiveness, because defenses don't have to worry about Dax Milne or Cam Sims. They don't have to worry about them in the same way that you would have to worry about Curtis Samuel. But it's not noticeable, but it is noticeable, if that makes sense. And to me, like, that shows up most on, like, how much time and effort you have to devote to that guy. Because, like, defenses are worried about Curtis. That juke that we were talking about is kind of a perfect distillation. Even though we have extremely briefly seen Curtis at his peak, you know, if ever really in Washington, like, the ceiling on a Dax or a Cam Sims does not seem to be that high. So I think it's sort of, you see it in the negative. What is missing stands out. Because of, I think how explosive Curtis can be.
Yeah, I mean, it doesn't, like, the extremely surface level analysis is better players are better. Like, he's a special player, so obviously he's going to be better. But I also think back to a conversation I had, I think it was with McVay. It was either with McVay or O'Connell when they were here. And it was one of those years where everybody got hurt in Washington. And it's hard to remember which one it was because there were so many of them. But basically, he said, like, our offense right now, when we break the huddle, there's no one that you have to worry about. Like, we used to have DeSean Jackson and Pierre Garçon and Jordan Reed and all of these guys, and now we got nothing. We got Jordan Reed a couple times a year. And so there's no one that you have to play any special coverage to. There's no one that really scares you. And that's kind of, we talk about Curtis, like, every time the Washington breaks the huddle with Samuel, the defense has to know exactly where he is. And because they move him around that so much, that actually becomes difficult. Then you have to check and all that kind of stuff. And I just don't know, even with guys as versatile as Gibson and McKissick and as dangerous as Dotson is, I don't know if they have someone who can be that direct replacement for that.
One player I think this also applies to is Deami Brown. And obviously when you have a guy with that sort of speed who is just running nine routes and averaging 20 yards a carry at North Carolina. It's going to take some adjustment in the NFL. We saw it a little bit last year, but obviously he struggled, didn't produce as much as they wanted him to. But I've seen Diami run a lot more short routes this camp, and if he can really nail the execution on those short crossers and threaten the DB to, you know, to break it off and go upfield, if he can give himself that sort of versatility and develop as a route runner in that way, I think his speed can function similar to what we're talking about with Curtis. He obviously doesn't have that running back experience. He doesn't have the positional flexibility and the ability to line up in all these different spaces. But I think his speed can serve the same function.
Yeah, that's a great point. I was actually going to ask about him. Now I don't have to because you told us. Sam Fortier of the Washington Post with us for Not My Beat today. Of course, Sam is the beat reporter covering the Commanders for the Washington Post. Craig Hoffman with you here on the Team 980. One thing that I thought was interesting from Jahan's comments at the podium today was he said some of the intermediate routes are starting to really develop, and that's been one of the slower, you know, things that has kind of come along. Everyone gets obsessed with the deep ball for obvious reasons. A lot of short, quick game stuff. It happens in a lot of modern NFL offenses, including this one. But I think the biggest difference maker for this team this year would actually be the intermediate stuff and Wentz's ability to drive the ball in those 15, 20-yard throws and get some chunk plays. What have you seen in terms of that kind of intermediate space between the short, quick game stuff and the, you know, let's uncork a ball 50 yards down the field deep balls?
John's comments were also interesting to me because I had not thought about them as much, because to me it seems like Carson has a better rapport with certain personnel rather than routes or depth. Like, he and Jahan really have clicked. I think it's taken he and Terry longer. So, and I will say that those intermediate routes that we're talking about, that is, I think, a thing that could open up this Washington offense, not just because of if they can get the timing down right, but it's just not something that they've had. It, obviously, you know, people have seen and we've talked about the inability to throw deep, but the last 2 years, each of them, Washington has had the lowest average depth of target in the NFL. Like, you know, obviously that happens when Taylor Heinicke and Alex Smith and guys that love to check it down and get the ball out of their hands real quick are the quarterbacks. But when we're talking about Carson Wentz, it's not just pushing it down the field. It's also that intermediate range. If you can get Terry McLaurin consistently on a 15-yard in, things like that, that would really, I think, do a lot to open up the offense, you know, lighten boxes for Antonio Gibson. I've seen some development in those routes, but to me it's really stood out more as, you know, they're really clicking with a Cam Sims or a Jahan in that way, in the way that they're not clicking, I think, so far with Terry. Obviously, he has moments like that back shoulder fade at the stadium practice, but it's less about depth. It's more about personnel so far.
What do you think is the issue between Carson and Terry? Not to say there's like they don't get along. They're not friends. Like, this, just from a pure football standpoint, is it just the lack of reps because Terry did miss the offseason?
Yeah, to me, it's, you can tell that Jahan, I mean, he got to throw to for all of minicamp and all of the offseason workouts. And Terry, it's been, you know, a little slower. And I think he's probably starting to figure those things out. Terry talked about this on Saturday. And he was really pleased with that back shoulder fade. First time they had run a back shoulder fade in the red zone, and the timing was perfect. So I would say those issues, those kinks that Terry and Carson are working out are the byproduct of just the contract holdout. And I think it's, you know, if you still want to criticize the team for, you know, taking too long to get that deal done, I think a lot will hinge on these two preseason games, because realistically they're only going to play two or meaningful snaps in two, right? Like,
yeah.
If they can figure it out over the next 4 weeks, 3 weeks, I think then you're like, oh, okay, that's totally fine. They got up to speed. They're professionals. It's fine. But if they don't, if that lingers in a week one and a week two, then you start saying, okay, like, what was the long-term benefit to really trying to, well, win that contract negotiation with Terry when you have such a big year and you have a new quarterback?
Right. Not to mention, it would have been really great for Terry to get in and be able to mentor Jahan from day one, especially with that new quarterback, as you were just saying. Sam Fortier with us from the Washington Post, Commanders beat reporter on the Hoffman Show. All right. On the other side of the field, big story of the day that obviously blew up your day yesterday. what have you been able to learn about what happened between Ron Rivera, Jack Del Rio, Sam Mills, whoever else was involved there, that ultimately leads to Sam Mills' dismissal?
Yeah, so Sam Mills, the dismissal, Ron Rivera was very emphatic. It was his decision. It was because of what he saw during the offseason and during training camp so far. You know, he really emphasized this was not because of the defense's underperformance last year, though I think plenty of people understood that you know, they needed more. And according to people that I've talked to, Ron, at the beginning of the offseason, when he's meeting with all his coaches, he told Sam, I need more from this unit. They obviously go out, they change the unit, you know, they cut Ioannidis, they let Tim Settle walk, they bring in Fedarian Mathis, and by, you know, early August, it's not working. It's still not working. He hadn't made enough changes, so he decides to fire Sam Mills. Today, he talked about watching Jeff Scanina, the new coach, his energy, his interactiveness, the way that he was demonstrative and hands-on with the guys, and he said, that is what I was looking for, that's what I wanted. So to me, that implies that Rivera at some point told Mills, hey, we need more of that. And, you know, he didn't see it. So to me, it seems like why he made that decision.
Do you buy it? Because Ron's been working with this guy for a long time. Like, he knows what he was as a coach.
Certainly. I think there's, you know, he was one of the things that was interesting to me is that if you go back and look at it, those Carolina teams that he was the defensive line coach for are much different than the Washington teams. You know, Carolina had a lot of veterans. That was a Julius Peppers, Mario Addison, Kawan Short. Obviously much younger in Washington. And if you want to say, like, well, you know, he's had these guys for, you know, 2.5 years now or 2 years in a training camp, like, why didn't Ron make this decision earlier? That's a totally valid question. And to me, it sounds like if Ron had that meeting with Sam and said, I need more from the D-line, because 2021 obviously was not acceptable, particularly, you know, because they're two star edge rushers. It just, you know, Ron criticized their lack of discipline, especially in run lanes last year early before they got hurt. That's a totally valid thing. But if Ron says at the beginning of the year, hey, I need something from you, and then he doesn't see it and decides to make that decision when he feels like – there's no more to go. I do buy that. But, you know, that's just my sense from having talked to some people in the building. And you know, I get why there'd be people who are skeptical of it, but that's my sense of how it went down.
Yeah, that makes a lot of sense. On the defensive side of the ball, one of the other things that I think has been really interesting from this training camp is the linebacker spot, but maybe not in the same tenor that a lot of people have talked about it. Like, a lot of people have said, oh, God, how can David Mayo be playing over Jamin Davis? And then I talk to people about David Mayo, and everyone's kind of like, well, actually, he's not bad. Like, he's kind of good at the stuff that he's good at. What have you seen from Mayo? And then ultimately, can you put that in context about what that means for Davis, who still has a higher ceiling and is a first-round pick and you'd hope could be better than David Mayo at all of the things? But, like, realistically, if we take away the pedigrees and all that kind of stuff, where are you at with this linebacking core and specifically those two players?
Yeah, so I think the linebacking core overall is probably the weakest position on the team. I think there's a lot of concern there. I think Cole Holcomb will be fine at Mike. You know, he did a lot of those responsibilities last year. But in terms of Jamin and Mayo, like, Mayo has not been playing over Jamin except for a few snaps and a few plays, and then particularly in goal line. In goal line, when they go bigger, David is in. And like you said, he's good at stopping the run. He is good at being the mic and figuring things out and diagnosing an offense. That is what he excels at, which obviously Jamin struggled with quite a lot last year. So to me, David Mayo cannot be a long-term solution. I mean, my mind flashes back to the game in Philly last year where they had a running back run an angle route out of the backfield and David Mayo could not keep up with him. So it's like, but that's not his fault. You know, like, he's a 7-year veteran. We know what David Mayo is. So to me, you need Jamin Davis to take a step forward. You need him to be an off-ball linebacker and really compete for this team. You can't rely on David Mayo. But if but that's on the coaching staff and on the, you know, on the personnel department, I think, more than it is on David Mayo or Jamin Davis, if that's what your personnel grouping is. You know what I mean?
Yeah, definitely. So with that said, would you try to make a move for Roquan Smith?
So here's the thing, is I've been thinking about this a lot. I think it is very, very unlikely that Washington makes that move. Because if you go back and look at it, Roquan Smith is 25 years old, coming off an all-pro season. In the last decade, the only comparable trade is the Khalil Mack trade in 2018 from Oakland to Chicago. And that was two first-round picks, two other picks. And even if and Khalil Mack was 2 years older, albeit he was a little more established, he had a couple all-pro seasons. But if you go back through that, I can't see them giving up that level of draft capital, even if you only give up one first-round pick and another pick. Like, I don't see them giving up that draft capital, because once you get him, you then have to pay him at least $17 million in APY and maybe $19 million, because Shaquille Leonard in Indianapolis and Fred Warner in San Francisco, kind of those two dudes at that position in the league right now, who I think Roquan Smith is, if he says he's those guys, like, I think he's that caliber. I believe him. I don't think you're going to be willing to pay $19 million in APY. I mean, this year they have $13 million in cap right now, but they could find that money. Teams, you know, have cap funny money all the time. But I just think the cost in draft capital and salary will probably be too much for Roquan.
See, that's exactly where I'm at. Because at first I was like, oh my God, is this like a gift from heaven? And then you realize they've got to make a gift or make a decision on paying. They got to pay Sweat. Young is looming, and they don't have room to pay anybody else. Like, they got to pay their own guys. And as good as Roquan is, like, the difference between him and Mack, as good as Roquan is, again, Mack was a pass rusher. Roquan's a middle linebacker. And unfortunately for Smith, the way the NFL has shifted over the past couple of years, that's no longer the premium position it used to be, because teams just don't run it as much.
Exactly. And like, to kind of go back to your point earlier, right? Better players are better. You hear Roquan Smith, one of the best coverage linebackers in the league, is like all of a sudden available or possibly available. And you go like, oh, that would do a lot for Washington. But just when you break down the numbers, kind of like positional value, as you pointed out about what that linebacker means. I mean, you saw what it meant to not have one last year, but I still don't think they're worth $19 million probably, especially when you've constructed your team the way you have. So it ultimately just probably doesn't make sense, even though it's like, hey, that dude's really good, and it would be good to have him on my team.
Right, right, exactly. And this is what it means to manage a team in the cap era. Like, you've got to decide where to spend money and where not to. They've made their decisions, and now they got to see if it's going to work. You can read Sam's coverage, WashingtonPost.com/sports. Sam, this was great. We will certainly do it again. Very much appreciate your time. Enjoy a cooler rest of the week, and then preseason game one on Sunday. The heat is over.
Oh, man, don't tell me the heat's over, because then it's coming back.
It's supposed to be, like, lows in the high 60s, highs in the low to mid 80s. Like, y'all should be, again, everything's relative, but you should be a lot better than it has been.
Man, this is going to get my mom off my back when she FaceTimes me and sees me a little sunburned. So I'm going to take the wins where I can get them. And I appreciate you having me on, Craig. Shout out to Anthony one more time. Always enjoy being on. Thanks, guys.
Hey, Sam, you're welcome. Oh, did you hang up? Maybe he hung up.
I think he hung up to her.
I was waiting for a hearty Sam Fortier laugh, and I was robbed of that. I thought that you're welcome was going to hit him hard, Anthony. Instead, it landed just so flat. It landed in sadness. Well, you know, you can't win them all. All right, Scott Jackson will join us next. We'll have more wins on deck, despite that massive L.
The Hoffman Show on the T980 and the Odyssey app.
It's the Hoffman Show on the Team 980 and always live on the free Odyssey app. We got Scott Jackson with us the next couple of days for the back half of the show. Scott, what's up, man? How are you?
Good afternoon, guys. How is everybody?
Doing well. You were out at camp today, so I want to get your thoughts on that. But really, all we are doing is building to 5:15 today.
Uh-oh.
Because at 5:15 today, the plan is to find out between you and Anthony who is the pickier eater.
Oh, boy. I got to say I am. I mean, I've had longer at it than Anthony. I'm a lot older than Anthony. I mean, it's me by far. He was growing up in the generation that tried to eat healthy. You know, I was not, and I struggle with it. You know, I've had 20-plus years, well, 25 now, of marriage where my wife's been trying to fix me on that, and I'm still slow. I'm a slow learner. Let me just leave it at that.
Okay.
But I'm feeling pretty confident. I'm better, a worse eater than Anthony for sure.
Okay. Well, it's not worse eater. And we also, as someone who works in the health and fitness space and has dabbled in some education around diet and food culture, I will say we will not label foods as good or bad. That is very against the rules.
So
it's not about being a better or worse. It's pickier. And again, we're also going to follow the Sherry Burris rule. We're not going to yuck anyone's yum. We're just interested.
I'll be ready.
So if you want to tweet me at Hoffman Show with foods that you have on a regular basis, because that's the thing. We're not trying to get crazy recipes here and be like,
rattlesnake or anything like that. Yeah.
No, it's like, I like chicken parmesan. Scott and Anthony, do you like chicken parmesan?
Oh, that's an easy one, of course, yeah.
So we'll get to that. Anthony, do you not like chicken parmesan?
I don't like. Hold on, let me finish.
Oh, I'm out of some competition.
Time out. I don't like chicken parm. I love chicken
parm. Okay. Dude, if you didn't like chicken parm, like then I'm out of this because I'm already lost. I mean, if you didn't like chicken parm, I mean, there's really no helping you.
Yeah, I think if you don't like chicken parm, John Buccigross just magically appears and you know, smacks you or something. I don't know. All right, so tweet me at Hoffman Show. What's your favorite food? Well, let's do it that way. What's your favorite food? And then we will find out from Scott and Anthony if they like that food. Okay. And we will hopefully, by the end of that, find out who is the pickiest eater. All right. For now, though, as we build to that at 5:15, our training camp 5 at 5 coming up at 5. Scott, thoughts from training camp today besides being ticked off that they weren't in pads?
You come off a padded day, man. It's such a buzzkill when they're not in pads. You know, today was fine. I mean, like yesterday, the offense was terrific. Like, I thought yesterday Wentz was at his best the times I've been out there, and I've been the last 3 days. Obviously, Saturday I saw enough of the video to know he wasn't at his best. I saw some of that stuff, and obviously the concerns and the questions at Ron Rivera, and he has answered. You know, Carson's answered, Terry's answered. But I thought yesterday he was terrific. You know, tight window stuff, all the whole route tree, right? He's throwing everything, right? Today he hit a couple big plays, but then you had a pick, McCain, and then there was just it was just ugly for a while. It was an ugly stretch. And then there was a lot of the backups. There was a lot of Heineke. There was a lot of Sam Howell. I have to say, I continue to be impressed with Sam Howell, who every day does a little bit more. They give him a little bit more. And, you know, there's just a lot of it's an interesting, you know, there's not a ton of roster spots, as you know, Craig. There's not a ton of roster spots up for grabs here. But the ones that are up for grabs are going to have some decisions. Tight ends, wild. I mean, they got a lot of depth there.
It's nuts at tight end.
This kid Amari Rodgers is for real. I mean, I know Ron says there's some things he doesn't know yet, but in terms of running routes, catching the football, now, again, this is against his own teammates. Let's see him do it. And then, like, one of my buddies hit me up this week and said, hey, they shouldn't let that guy play in the preseason if they're going to try to, you know, sneak him into the practice squad, which is kind of funny, and it's actually not that crazy of a theory. But, you know, that's a good room. The receivers, I mean, Kelvin Harmon looks great. I mean, he really does. And I feel for the guy because he's really up against it in terms of numbers. He doesn't return kicks. Dax Milne can. Dax has got more wheels. But, you know, Kelvin catches stuff in traffic. He always catches the ball. And Dax has been really good, too. So that's going to be interesting how that breaks down. And this kid, you know, Sony Michel's brother, Mark and Michelle, apparently he does this everywhere. And he's like 29. He's not a kid. I keep saying kid. He's 29. I mean, he's been around a lot. I guess he's done this at Panthers camp for a bunch of times, done it at Eagles camp. But he's a pro's pro. I mean, he just, you know, runs the routes, catches the ball when it's thrown his way. Just, you know, little simple things like that that you need to do as a receiver, which is good. And I don't think Ron is, like, making this up when he says, hey, this running back group's the best group we've had. It's true. I mean, you know, you look at Williams and you're like, this guy could probably play, you know, on Sunday, no problem, and he has, but he's going to have a hard time making this team because you figure, obviously, Gibson, Robinson Jr., who you drafted, obviously, you have McKissick's got his role, and if you go to a fourth, it's, you know, Patterson or Williams, you know, I don't know. I mean, if you go four, they probably don't go four. They probably go three, so that's tough, but he's a pro. I mean, he should be playing somewhere. So those groups are interesting. I'm still a little unsure of the middle part of the offensive line, and I'm probably not going to be sure about that that group until they actually play real teams. Besides,
yeah,
own, you know,
yeah. I mean, the position battles are fascinating because it does feel like they're very even and they're very deep. And that's kind of also this team. Like, this team has a lot of good football players. I don't think they have a lot of great ones. Terry is pretty great. Chase is supposed to be pretty great when he gets back. Montez looks like he could be great.
Yes.
John Allen looks like he's very, very, very good and possibly great. And so there's just not a lot of top-end talent on this team compared to the teams that compete in the Super Bowl, for instance. Obviously, that's the ultimate goal, and not every team can. I get that, but, like, that's the goal. And you look at the top-end talent in Cincinnati last year and obviously Los Angeles. They had a ton of it. A place like Buffalo, like, they've got stars on stars on stars, and that's just not what this team does. But they do have extreme depth at some of these positions. And the thing about, like, the tight end room, and obviously we've spent a lot of time on this on Take Command because Logan is a tight end and has an affinity for that position for that reason. You know, he said he's never seen a room that's like this. He's never seen a room this deep with this many guys. And for as talented as Armani Rogers is and as talented as Curtis Hodges is, I asked, who do we have on for yesterday? Or who do we have on yesterday, Anthony? Who was our beat reporter on yesterday? I'm trying to remember.
At four?
I don't know if we had – do we have a beat reporter
Ben was
on
in with you yesterday, right?
Oh, yeah, Ben was in with yesterday. That's who it was. Scott, how – Thank you for listening to the show.
Yeah, no problem.
Of the three people here right now, someone's got to listen, and it makes the most sense that it was the person who was not an active participant. It was Ben who said this yesterday. He goes, if I had to pick the fourth guy right now, I'd probably pick Sam Meese. And you look at their unofficial depth chart they released yesterday, and it's Reyes, and it makes sense because he was a great special teams player for them last year. And that's ultimately what a lot of this stuff is going to come down to, is for as talented as these kids are, and for as good as they might wind up being, and for as better as they could be as an offensive player, their roles would be limited this year because they are rookies and it's hard.
Yeah.
And realistically, the end of your roster is about where are they going to play, which is on special teams, and who's better at that stuff.
Yeah, and it's goofy because they bring in, like, in the old days, you'd say, well, who's your kickoff returner, right? And who's your punt returner? But now the kickoff's kind of like, you're going to get, like, how many kicks you're actually going to return each year. Yeah, right. Maybe by the latter part of the season when the kicker's legs are fatigued, you see more returns, right? It's colder. So, you know, I even saw Brian Robinson Jr. return a kick a couple days ago. Now, I know he's caught some before, but he actually took it out. And it's like, oh, that's interesting. You know, Danny Johnson's done it before if he's in the final roster, obviously. You know, Milne is, again, more of a punt guy. And they can always the break glass thing, which, you know, what the Eagles did for many years with DeSean Jackson with Jahan Dotson,
right.
And this team tried to do a few times as well with him. So I agree with what Ben says, because I think me and him were having the same conversation. I was like, I don't know if this kid Armani Rogers can cover kicks or block, and he can't block apparently yet, which is a problem. Same with Hodges. You know, Cole Turner's not a particularly good blocker either, as you know. Logan's told you all these things too. So it's kind of weird. Unless, of course, you know, Logan Thomas is not available right away, then one of these, you know, these guys are going to have to be, you know, kept on the practice squad. You know, some of these latter guys, you know, whether it's Hodges or obviously Armani Rogers, or again, Armani shows them just too much. Maybe he's just too good, right? Like, maybe he's just too good in the games, and they're like, all right, sorry, we'll figure this out. You know, maybe that's what happens. Or you keep an extra player somewhere else that can fill the role of Samus Reyes, you know, on the specials. I don't know. But that usually that's how it works, right? Like, usually you have to have some special teams value when you're one of those last guys in your rooms, so to speak.
Right. The one thing I will say is we always, because of proximity, fall in love with guys.
Yeah.
In the same way that every other team is having their media, their fans, and in a way, probably their coaches falling in love with guys. Like, there are Armani Rogers' other places in the NFL. The other teams aren't necessarily going to be after our Armani Rogers, you know, our Curtis Hodges, because they've got their own. They've got guys that know their system that are more or that they obviously liked better as prospects, which is why they brought them in. And so, you know, a guy like Turner is a fifth rounder. Like, yeah, that guy, you can't try to sneak on practice squad. But Hodges is an undrafted guy, unless he just has a monster preseason game. Sure, Rogers is an undrafted guy, converted quarterback. Like, how quickly can he realistically play NFL tight end outside of very specific situations that don't involve blocking, which is half of the position?
Right.
Like, realistically, he probably can't do that very quickly. So, like, it's great that these guys are playing well. I'm very curious to see what happens when they get against jerseys that aren't their own. But I do think sometimes we get a little carried away at this time of year with guys that we've seen and no one else has.
Well, I was talking about this very thing the other day when I was filling in for Kevin. I mean, there's a list of like all-time preseason performers here, and I had people swearing to me when they were released by this team that we would rue the day. Like, you probably remember this, like Mack Brown was cut here multiple times. And everybody, oh my God, they let Mack Brown go again. He's going to go, and he's going to star in wherever, but he didn't. I mean, it just, you know, he got opportunities. He was fine, you know, but he never did. He had some great moments here. In regular season, he had some great moments here.
Mack's a guy that, yeah. Look, I was covering those teams on the beat. Like, I thought Mack should have gotten some more run.
Well, me too. I mean, especially then with the backs they had outside of, you know, Thompson. And it was the only consistent one, really, and that, you know, when he was healthy, but he, you know, that was part of his problem. But then you look at, you know, this, like, you know, Marco Mitchell was this guy back here in like 09 or something like that, and he was like just a monster preseason performer, never to be heard of again after he was released here. So we always have these guys, but you're right, like, we overvalue them because we're here, and then, you know, but there's always the odd chance, like the year they cut Nate Sudfeld, I would have bet anything, yeah, there's no chance he was putting a claim on this guy, he'll be on your roster. And of course the Eagles jumped in because they liked him going into the draft. And they grabbed him. So you just never know. You play that game, you gamble a little bit, but at the end of it, that's not what, like, costs you from being a playoff team, you know, or a championship team. But it is aggravating when you see those things happen. You'd like to be smart about, you know, the roster juggling that you make to keep, maybe squeeze an extra few guys around. You know, back in the old days around here, when they were in their heyday, Joe Gibbs would just make up an injury for somebody, and they would keep them here and pay them a lot of money, and nobody would be the wiser.
Right, and those kinds of things happen sometimes still, and especially with expanded practice squads, things like that. But, you know, you put a guy in a certain place or whatever, like, you know, IR or whatever, like they can't play this season, so it becomes a long-term thing. And guys, if they think they can play right now, are going to want to play right now. Let's have some fun with this next.
Okay.
301-230-0980. Let's go to the Team 980 listener line. We did – this topic kind of similarly that we've now stumbled into on the podcast a couple weeks ago, and we called it the Rashad Ross Award because he was the guy that was this
stud.
When I was on the beat, he was the guy that every single year, it's like, how could you cut Rashad Ross? He's amazing. He was the preseason MVP. He was incredible. And then he would never really do anything in the regular season. So who is the guy that you think is going to win the Rashad Ross Award as a preseason star who doesn't do anything in the regular season? And then, I don't know, Scott, who is the namesake for a guy who actually makes the team and then turns out to be productive?
You know, it's funny because Rashad had a little stretch. I can't remember what year it was where he scored a couple touchdowns in games and played a little bit. And I was wrestling with this the other day talking about it, but I did ultimately put him on my list of guys like that. But in terms of somebody who would actually make the team and play and be okay – that's a good one. I mean, like maybe a Cam Sims award, because Cam Sims, right, like was flashing in preseason,
one.
And he had to like squeeze in on the roster, and then he's always a forgotten guy for a couple weeks. And like, oh, we got this new guy, we got this guy, and then well, lo and behold, there's Cam Sims making plays. Maybe it's the Cam Sims award.
I love that. All right, yeah. So we need 301-230-0980. Your Rashad Ross Award nominee and your Cam Sims Award nominee. That's next, the Hoffman Show on the Team 980, and always live on the Free Odyssey app.
The Hoffman Show on the Team 980 and the Odyssey app.
Stop, drop, shut them down, open up shop.
Hoffman Show on the Team 980 and always live on the free Odyssey app. Here's what we are trying to find from you. 301-230-0980. Here's what we're taking from you. Scott Jackson's with me today. We need your Rashad Ross Award nominee. Who is the player that is going to star in the preseason and then either not make the team or not really do much at all during the regular season? And then who is the player who wins your Cam Sims Award, who everyone's like, wow, this guy's great. And then he actually is productive and makes plays, maybe comes through. Doesn't have to be an everyday starter kind of player, but comes through at some point and impacts games in a positive way during the regular season. Haney, you were mad excited. So before Scott and I unleash, you were so excited.
He jumped
in the break.
Out so fast,
he was trying to give it, and we're like, save it for the air, bro. What do you got? Who you got?
So for my Rashad Ross Award winner, I think this guy is going to ball out in the preseason, and I think he's going to make the team as the last receiver. I'm going with my boy Dax Mill.
Woo!
Okay.
I'm going with Dax Mill. After seeing what he's done at training camp, being able to just catch everything. I haven't seen him drop the ball, for one. And then also, he's crisp in his route running. He's plays through his contact. So Dax Mill is my Rashad Ross award winner. I don't necessarily have... Yes, sir. I don't have my Cam Sims award winner. I need to think a little bit.
Yeah, so
I'm not going to copy you guys, though. I'm not going to copy you guys.
All right. I tell you, he's confusing.
Scott, who you got?
All right, so the Rashad Ross Award, when I already talked about this kid, Marky Michelle, Sony Michelle's brother, because he's going to be great, he's going to make plays, and he's going to get cut. Just because of the people that we've already talked about, you know, including Kelvin Harmon and including, you know, including
Cam Sims
Mill.
Himself.
And Cam Sims himself, right. You know, that's why he's not going to make it. But he's going to make plays. He will definitely make plays. And he's kind of the guy you want to play, right, late in the game because you know, probably not going to keep him. So you're just going to let him blow out there. Him and Sam Howell will ball out together. Him and Heineke, you know, he'll get a lot of time out there, I would think. So I'm going to go with him.
Okay. My Rashad Ross Award, man, this is tough. I think I'm going to go with Armani Rogers because I think there are just too many tight ends. I think he's a tremendous project who could ultimately be a good player in this league. But if we're talking about the 2022 Rashad Ross Award, I think he's behind Hodges. He's behind Turner. He's obviously behind Bates. I think he's behind Reyes, and he's behind Logan Thomas. There's too many names in front of him. That doesn't mean that he's not going to get out there as he's running combo routes with Mark and Michelle, and he's also going to make plays. And I just don't think he's ultimately going to make the roster. So that's Jonathan Williams or Jared Patterson are also good candidates. Yeah. Although, I actually, you know what? I think my Cam Sims Award, this is a risky one.
Okay.
I think I might go Jonathan Williams. That kid can play.
I was leaning that way, actually.
That kid can play. Like, he's a good running back. I think the nature of the position means someone's going to go down at some point for some amount of games this year. If he can find his way on this roster, which, by the way, is a big if, but a lot of running backs who kind of bounce around are in his position, like they've got some special teams experience. It's not unheard of for him to be able to cover kicks, be the punt protector, whatever it may be. If he can get his way on this roster, I think he could have a game this year where if he gets some carries, like he can score for you.
Nah, I like him. Yeah, I tell you, if they can sneak him, if nobody gets him injured and they keep three, if they can get him a practice squad, they'll probably need him at some point, right? At some point, you're going to need him. But I don't know. I mean, he's been around the league a little bit, though, so maybe they get away with it. As you said, maybe there's other Jonathan Williams with other teams right now. But I mean, he is a pro. When you watch him run, you're like, whoa.
Yeah.
He can ball out.
Yeah.
All right, Haney, you don't have a Cam Sims Award winner? You sure you don't want to go that route?
I feel like, Craig is going Jonathan Williams. I'm going someone else, I think.
All right.
Okay, well, that makes it more interesting. So,
I'm going Jared Patterson. I really like what I saw out of Jared Patterson. He also had a couple of long runs on the days that I was at camp, and also just looking at what I've seen on Twitter as well. And then if you just look back to last year, the game against Philly, we did lose in a close game, but he had 12 attempts where he had almost 60 yards. So I just think being able to build off like what he did last year, I really think if someone was to go down, I will be confident in, you know, putting the ball in his hands.
I just don't know if he makes the final 53. I mean, unless you keep four, it's tough. Unless somebody gets hurt. I mean, obviously Robinson's on the team this year, which is different. Obviously McKissick and Gibson. I don't know. I like the guy too, but I'm just trying to figure out who's still on the team. I mean, I like five of them, and you're not going to keep that many. You can probably keep only three. All right, here's your Cam Sims Award winner. I wanted so badly just to give it to Cam Sims because every year they forget about him, and he makes play after play, and then like we'll be in like week six going, why the heck is so-and-so still out there, and he can't catch a cold, put Cam Sims in the game, and then he does. But I actually think this year they figured it out. They actually paid him to come back. Wasn't great money, but it's good enough. And he has, like, as you guys know, a very important word when Carson Wentz is your quarterback, catch radius, which is often talked about. But another guy who's got catch radius – and Anthony has him as a Rashad Ross Award winner, which is a mistake because this guy will, in fact, make the team and will, in fact, make plays. I also think he's going to be a primary punt returner is Dax Milne. Dax Milne has looked a lot more comfortable in year two. and former Mr. Irrelevant, correct? Is that right? Was he Mr. Irrelevant? Or was he just our seventh round pick? No, maybe.
I think he's just a seventh rounder. Yeah, he was seventh be confusing him with Trey Quinn.
Yes, I am. Boy, that's
terrible. Apparently he was making plays in whatever camp he was in
the other day. Right?
Someone retweeted something. Here's why I like Dax Milne more for Cam Sims Award than Rashad Ross Award. Curtis Samuel's lack of availability.
Yes.
At some point this season, which feels inevitable, even if he's on track to play week one, and we certainly wish Curtis the best. But if he is out, Milne is a guy who might get a lot more snaps because he is a slot guy. Yeah. Like, he can line up inside, outside. Like, in that position, flex is obviously very helpful. He's reliable. He catches everything. But the fact that he can line up inside where a guy like De'Ami Brown is more likely to be an outside guy, I think that actually could put Milne in a better place to play. I do think his punt return ability could get him on the roster. Another guy that I was considering for this is Alex Erickson, who I think could make the team as a kick returner. And obviously, if he makes a play as a kicker or punt returner, he would automatically qualify as Cam Sims Award for making plays. So I think Erickson is an interesting one. I noticed that we went all offensive guys.
You know why? I was thinking that too, but it's so much easier, as you know, to when you're at camp, because we haven't had any games yet. Without having any ability to tackle anybody, it's hard to get pumped up about the defensive youngsters.
But
they don't get as many reps.
I'm going to say at 5:30, let's circle back around, and maybe we'll rename the awards. Like, there's the DeShazer Everett Award, who's like the best 4A player, basically. You know, the guy who's going to be an awesome preseason player.
What about Jimmy Moreland Award winner, who's like the guy who makes all the practice plays, and then the season starts, and you're like, come on, man, where to go?
Or we'll just go through the last decade of Commanders Washington football team football and come up with awards. But perhaps we'll also name the actual nominees and winners. So we'll do that coming up at 5:30. Of course, the highlight of the show today is at 5:15, where we assign the pickiest eater on the show between Scott and Anthony, because it's definitely not me. So we're still taking your favorite foods at Hoffman Show. You can hit me there on Twitter. We'll take some calls later in the show as well. 301-230-0980. But next, our training camp 5 at 5, the top 5 things you need to hear from the podium today.